United Lutheran Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast, conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more, with voices from around the corner and around the globe.
U.S. Army chaplain serving America in particular and very useful ways. Hello, I'm Jerry Christensen, and this is the Seminary Explores. Our guest today, two of them, in fact, are Chaplain Glenn Palmer, who now serves as Chief Training Development Division, U.S. Army Chaplain Center and School at Fort Jackson in South Carolina. He currently holds the rank of Lieutenant Colonel. And Chaplain Karen Meeker, who serves as the Chief of the Recruiting Division of the Office of the Chief of Chaplains in the Pentagon. Welcome to both of you. What's, Karen, you hold the rank of Colonel, so let's start with you. What is the mission of the chaplaincy of the United States military?
Well, hi, Jerry. It's great to be with you today and here with Chaplain Palmer. Our mission is to provide and perform religious support for our soldiers and their families wherever they are stationed, either here in the United States or around the world. We all come from a particular DOD endorsing agency that endorses every single chaplain. So I'm United Methodist. I know Chaplain Palmer is Lutheran. And so every chaplain is performing out of their religious organization. And yet we provide for the religious needs of all our soldiers and their families. So it's a great honor to be able to support the young men and women who voluntarily serve our nation in uniform.
Glenn, you can be a pastor as you were before you got into the military and still be a chaplain?
So I served 7 years in a parish after graduating from seminary prior to coming on active duty. And I hope to do that again when I retire from the Army.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you find a great deal of similarity between the work you did then and the work you do now?
Mm.
Or differences? Emphasize what you wish.
Well, there are similarities in terms of the word and sacrament ministry, pastoral care. It's definitely a different environment in terms of the incarnational ministry. So as a chaplain, especially at the battalion and brigade level, you go to where soldiers and families are.
Right.
Now, they'll come to chapel. They'll come to you for counseling, pastoral care. But on a Monday morning, you're in the motor pool, right?
Doing yes.
random ministry of presence,
yes.
Ministry of wandering around.
Yes.
So you get to enter into their working space, their living space, their lives. When they deploy, you go with them. When they go to war, mm-hmm. you go with them. You share their experience totally. You're immersed in their culture. With the exception that you're non-combatant.
Chaplain Meeker, you have indicated there's a considerable need for chaplains at the moment. It probably is always a challenge to get a new and bright young persons, men and women, into the chaplaincy, but there is a specific need right now.
Yes, we're putting out a call across America for the best religious ministry professionals, the best clergy in America, to come and serve our soldiers and families. We're about 1,600 chaplains on active duty, and this year we're going to look to recruit about 400 chaplains for active duty.
You'd like to have the number around 2,000. Roughly.
Well, we lose chaplains to retirement
course.
And separations,
yeah.
We need to fill the ranks back up.
By the time you get up to 2,000, it'll be back down to 1,600, you'll need 400 again.
That's right.
The number of denominations that are represented, it includes everyone. So you'd like to have representatives from every, we say denominations, but also religion. There are Muslim chaplains, I presume.
We do.
There are Jewish chaplains.
We have rabbis, imams, Roman Catholic priests, Orthodox priests, mm-hmm. ministers, pastors, Buddhist mm-hmm. pastors. So we do recruit across religious organizations. There are 187 Department of Defense endorsers that range
wow.
a variety of religions and faiths.
And on that subject, Glenn, do you find support is strong from your own denomination? I mean, they were pleased or at least were supportive when you decided to become a chaplain?
They were supportive.
And you're still, what do you call it? You're still licensed by your church? And not licensed, what is it? Where you're still under call?
Yeah, so I have I'm under a special call from the
Evangelical Lutheran Church.
Yeah, the Federal Bureau of Chaplaincy for the ELCA.
Ah, I see. So, okay.
Yeah.
But that was not a problem. I mean, denomination generally is what I'm asking, are generally supportive of their people going into chaplaincy.
Yes, generally. Sometimes it depends on if they have enough clergy to meet their civilian needs. Sometimes there's a hesitancy to give up a clergy for the military. But as Chaplain Palmer stated, you know, when he's done with his military service, he looks forward to going back into the parish. And many of our chaplains do that, return to their faith group and continue to serve.
Mm. The needs that you have are relatively acute. And does that mean that you're doing a little traveling these days, Chaplain Meeker, from place to place, looking for, and once in a while picking up support from people like Chaplain Palmer?
We're in West Point yesterday, Gettysburg today.
Wow.
We've got some folks out on the West Coast and L.A. tomorrow. We're canvassing the country. We're putting the call out to our whole chaplain corps for every member of our chaplain corps to be out there recruiting family members, retirees, school officials, faculty, congregations across America. We feel we're connected to most of America, mm-hmm. So we just want to put that call.
What's the basic training for a chaplain?
Basic training is 13 weeks at Fort Jackson, South Carolina.
under your thumb. Okay, friends. Yeah.
That's for active duty. If you're Guard Reserve, you can split that up, different segments. So like a lot of seminarians will come this summer, knock it all out. But Reserve and Guard chaplains, they can do 2-3 week chunks and segments.
And what are you doing as the kind of one of the heads or the head of this training session? What do you want to do with your chaplains and training in 13 weeks?
So I supervise all the training development for the initial military training of chaplains, mm-hmm. For chaplains of the advanced course, their mid-level captain, kind of middle manager course, and for the young enlisted soldiers, their advanced individual training.
Okay, good.
So we do what we call ADDIE, analysis, design, development, implementation, and evaluation. So it's kind of a continual flow.
But the physical, I mean, they're out running every day too, aren't you? Don't you up in the morning and they're doing the calisthenics? And I mean, you're in the Army now.
That's
true. Because you're going to be going out with the unit very soon.
Yes.
And camping with them, whatever you call nowadays, you know, not quite camping anymore. I'm sorry. Yeah, in the field. Thank you. And so they're going to have to be as much a part of the Army as anybody else.
That is reality. That is part of the incarnational ministry. So, you know, if you're a chaplain, you graduate from the basic course and you go to a combat arms unit, you have to be able to run with them.
Chaplain Meeker, how did you decide to become a chaplain? Where were you at the time? Were you a Methodist minister in a parish, or have you been at this since the very beginning? How did you get into it, and why have you decided to stay with it?
I discerned a call to military ministry when I was in high school.
Oh, really?
And I pursued that calling with my pastor at the local United Methodist Church. Mm-hmm. And my family and community supported that. Mm-hmm. And so I went into basic training when I graduated high school.
Wow.
And I did ROTC in college and then the chaplain candidate program, which we have for seminarians. Mm-hmm. I did that in seminary and then I did my parish work. And a year in the mission field in the West Indies, and then I came on active duty as an Army chaplain.
While you were doing this from a very young age, you were still expected to serve some time in a parish somewhere, even though you had kept the hand in the military, you were in the West Indies, for example.
Part of our requirements to be an Army chaplain mm-hmm. is to have an undergraduate degree, a master's degree in theology or religion of at least 72 hours. And for active duty, we need 2 years of professional work experience.
I happen to know a little bit about your background, Glenn, and audience will excuse me for calling you by your first name so often, but since you were once a student.
I was.
With whom I was very familiar. But you were in the parish for 6-7 years, Maine, in fact. Was it during that time you thought, let's try the military? How'd this come about?
So I'd served as an enlisted Marine between high school and college. Went to college, had no thought or calling to come back in the military. Worked for 4 years and came to seminary and served a congregation for 7 years. 4 years into that call, there was an ice storm in Maine, and they called out the National Guard. And we were interviewing the state chaplain, and I thought, that looks like a great part-time ministry. Mm-hmm. So I applied and was accepted to be a chaplain in the Maine Army Guard, went to the chaplain officer basic course, and after 9/11, could kind of sense what was coming and shared with my wife, you know, I sensed this calling to active duty. Mm-hmm. But the congregation was in a good place. It was growing. And, you know, like St. Ignatius talks about that period of discernment,
yeah.
You know, you slow down and choose between two good things. So I loved parish ministry. It formed my pastoral identity. I know how to preach, teach, marry, bury, baptize. Mm-hmm. But then felt called to come on active duty in May of 2002. We moved to Fort Riley, Kansas.
We are talking today to two U.S. Army chaplains. Chaplain Glenn Palmer serves in the Training Division, Development Division of the U.S. Army Chaplain Center and School at Fort Jackson, South Carolina. And Chaplain Karen Meeker is the Chief of the Recruiting Division of the Office of Chief of Chaplains at the Pentagon. We love to have military titles that makes radio and podcasting people stumble mightily over all these titles. Which reminds me, you begin as a chaplain with a rank, an officer's rank.
That's correct. Our chaplains typically come in as captains, particularly like in the case of Chaplain Palmer, who mm-hmm. had done 7 years in the parish. That's an automatic captain rank.
So you started with the officer corps. What I wanted to do in this second half of our discussion today is the most important, actually, and that is to switch the subject not from the needs for chaplains or how you came to it, you too, but what are the soldiers' needs? Chaplain Meeker, let's start with you. What are the needs of the soldiers for chaplaincy?
Our soldiers have many of the same needs that young Americans do, and they're in a time of transition where they're beginning their adult life, they're starting their families, and yet they have the rigors of military life. The schedule is very demanding. They may be deployed or on exercises, so separated from their families for extended period of time, or combat operations. So those create a lot of stress for our young soldiers. And so our chaplains are there to provide a listening ear and wise counsel.
And you mentioned already that means families too, doesn't it? Because when there's separation, then husband or wife and often children are left at home for long periods of time. So there's a whole community to serve.
We like to say that the family serves as well. The spouse, the children, they make sacrifices along with the service member.
And you, Glenn, you've dealt with people with PTS, have you not? And is that some major with post-traumatic syndrome?
So, yeah, I prefer the term post-traumatic stress. And I think that there's been a paradigm shift away from the deep part, the disorder part. In terms of like post-traumatic stress, moving towards post-traumatic growth. And then so the experience of combat and all that goes with that, something that happens to you, but it doesn't own you or define you. And you find a new normal. It's new, it's different, but it is a normal you can get back to eventually over time.
And those people who suffer from that are not necessarily coming out of combat, are they? Mean the stress could be under any experience in the field or a long time away from their family or so.
Right. I mean
it's peacetime, and so you know there's still PTS.
So that would be a stressor. Mm-hmm. In the sense we use PTS, we typically refer to it in terms of combat. And there's also a focus now on moral injury, which is the disconnect between the ideal and sometimes what actually happens.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay, tell us about that. That's a new term to me. Either or both.
For the moral injury.
Yeah.
And that distinguishing between the post-traumatic mm-hmm. stress. With PTS, it's the trauma. There's some traumatic event that has happened to a person. Either they've witnessed it or they've experienced it physically, emotionally themselves. moral injury, it may be decisions that have been made, situations that they're in, that that their worldview, their understanding of morals and ethics has been violated in some way. And now they have to either reframe their worldview or deal with the guilt or shame that may have been associated with that experience.
Death and killing are two of the major issues. I mean, we can try to smooth over it, but deep down, armies and navies go to war for a purpose, don't they? So we have to deal with that. We're told all of our lives, you know, be nice, be kind, help one another. Then you get into the service and you say, you know, you got a mission. And it's at the other end of a rifle.
But so that is the beauty of if a chaplain has practiced an incarnational ministry in the midst of combat, you can be there with soldiers to help to prevent them from becoming somebody they aren't, even in the midst of that morally challenging situation, mm-hmm. and distinguishing between a legitimate shot, as it were, and an illegitimate shot. So they don't go home doing something they're ashamed of.
Mm-hmm. This is a noble occupation, and we should recognize it as such, but it comes with some costs. It always does.
Significant cost. I mean, legitimate or illegitimate, it's still a shot, and that anyone involved in those types of situations, there is a cost. Mm-hmm. And allowing people to deal with that, those experiences in a way that is healing and that they can return home with honor, very important.
Hold their head high.
Yes, and chaplains play a significant role in that for the care of the soldiers.
What are the satisfactions, Glenn? What are the satisfactions of being a chaplain? You've decided to stay with us after 7 years in the parish.
Right, but I'm getting to an age where the end is in sight.
But that's not your main satisfaction, that you're going toward a goal to say, I'm almost done.
Yeah, it's like Eugene Peterson talks about. It's been a long obedience in the same direction, just the joy of the ministry and the relationships and, you know, caring for those young soldiers and their families. And mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, so now I'm at an age and stage where they're like my children because they're the same age as my children.
Mm-hmm. But, and you remember being a Marine, in fact, before you even got to seminary, right?
Right.
So you know what it was like and how either how much you were served by or were not served well enough by chaplains in your own experience. So
right.
you can turn that to your favor.
Catholic priest assigned to our unit used to shoot pool with us. So that was my experience with the chaplain. So the building of the relationships, being there for people, that's an incarnational
thing. I get that. I'll remember that. And next time I shoot pool, I'll remember that.
I keep saying that. I learned something in
I'll remember you. Well, thank you. We won't tell where Glenn Palmer went to seminary. And same with you, Karen. What are your satisfactions? You've been at this since you were in high school. What a wonderful record.
I think to go into those difficult times and bring the light of Christ, mm-hmm. to bring a word of hope, I think one of the most difficult things we do as Army chaplains is go with a notification team to a family who is receiving the news that their loved one has died. And it's extremely difficult for the team to go in. And the chaplain is part of that team. And to go to a home that's receiving that news, but to bring the peace and light of Christ mm-hmm. into that dark, difficult moment, I think it's a great honor and treading sacred ground. So while it's extremely difficult to be able to walk into that space and provide some comfort.
It's holy ground.
Mm-hmm. And that is a satisfaction, as it would be in the ministry in general, right? Sometimes more crisis points in your job than there might be in the daily parish because of the presence of traumatic incidents, possible traumatic incidents, that means you're in need. What does my final question? What if people would like to become a chaplain? What's the daily routine like? What is it? What's your week like? Now you're both a little bit different, and you've also had different jobs. Chaplain Meeker, you're in an office a good bit of the time, probably, but nevertheless.
Well, as you might imagine, a lot of paperwork in the Pentagon. We champion bureaucracy, but for our chaplains out with units, a day can be filled from early morning to late at night with so many different activities and events. My first assignment was with the 82nd Airborne Division, yeah. So you know. While there's a lot of similarities between the parish and the chaplain corps, you know, I didn't jump out of airplanes, mm-hmm. you know, with the church. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's those kind of experiences mm-hmm. In being with the troops.
Yeah, and you were out there sleeping on the ground with them. I know that from my chaplain experience at the war college.
Sleeping.
or not. But on the day-to-day basis, at where you're located, there are going to be worship services once, twice, three times a week. Maybe not that many, maybe not in your case either, Glenn, because you're now an office holder, is right. But the ordinary chaplain would hold a service or two every week, would they not, for that denomination?
So depends on the location. In our context, ELCA, there might or not be a Lutheran/Episcopal combined service. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I've done Lutheran services. I've been the co-pastor of an Episcopal service. I've been the co-pastor of a gospel service, co-pastor of Chapel Next, which is a contemporary service, traditional, what we call collective traditional services. But so the service I'm taking part in where I am now is a 2 PCA, Presbyterian Church in America, a female PCUSA, male Baptist, and myself, ELCA. We made it work.
Okay. So yeah. What a wonderful ecumenical experience. We're talking today to Chaplain Glenn Palmer, who serves as Chief Training Development Division, U.S. Army Chaplain Center and School at Fort Jackson, and Chaplain Karen Meeker, who serves as the Chief Recruiting Division of the Office of Chief of Chaplains at the Pentagon. And we've tried to give some idea of what it might be like if one decides to be a chaplain, and even more important, what the chaplains do for America. For the Seminary Explorers, I'm Jerry Christensen. Have a very good day.
You have been listening to The Seminary Explorers, a production of United Lutheran Seminary with campuses in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We invite you to visit our website at unitedlutheranseminary.edu. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of United Lutheran Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.